righty, here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well. 98973. All are welcome. Come on in, everybody. State Roofing text line just waiting for you.
We have a new text line, too. Is that right?
We do.
I don't know. I heard Gene Ursula kept trumpeting a new text line. I assume that was the whole
station. Did they get their own line? Why don't we have our own line? All right, hang on. Diving in the news. Diving into the news. All right, the Republicans have just blocked a move that's basically not allowed the Democrats in order to keep the government going, and that's going to run out of money on Thursday, that lift the debt ceiling. This is the same stuff that happens all the time, right? And then basically they don't want them to do a little fancy roll around. They want them to come on the record and vote on continuing to spend at record levels.
Well, this is so supposedly this is to pay for bills that have already been spent.
Yes, right.
And the irony of this is that this is for a lot of this spending happened under the Trump administration. And the Republicans. Now, I'm going to take a kind of a partisan take on this. The Democrats went along. Because
Stop.
Unlike you, John, I try to be fair and balanced. But in this particular case, as right now, the Republicans are doing this to kind of, you know, screw the Democrats because they said, well, the Democrats, because when you've got the presidency, you're the ones in charge. Then if you screw up the country, it'll be blamed on you. That's sort of their calculation. It's a political calculation. The Democrats and right now they're objecting to the fact that we're looking at these two massive infrastructure bills, and they don't want to give the Democrats any credit. And so they're saying, you know what? We're not going to pay our bills. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats, maybe because they're being played as fools, they objected to like the big, as the Democrats see it, the tax giveaway to the rich under Trump's administration. But they didn't threaten to not raise the debt ceiling. So they say, hey, fair is fair. And everybody thinks this is all going to, it's all going to probably work out because the Republicans, I think, Mitch McConnell, in fact, this was great on yesterday on Fox News. Chris Wallace was asking their panel, and one of the guys on their panel is somebody who used to work in Mitch McConnell's office, says, you know, that doesn't really seem crooked. And he got this kind of Cheshire cat grin on his face. Mm-hmm. He says, no, but he says, you can count on Mitch McConnell. He knows the levers of government so well that he knows that he can get away with this without being blamed because the Democrats, if the Democrats just get every one of their majority votes, you know, in the Senate, they'll be able to get this through. And he says, yeah, but aren't you playing with the nation's future? And he says, yeah, but they don't really think that it never does. We've never gone into default. I mean, we did a couple of 12 years ago. But that really is bad for our credit, and it would be bad for the country, and even the Republicans don't want that on their head in concert with the Democrats. But that's what they voted down today, which means Democrats have to get their act together by Thursday themselves, and a lot of that is hinging on this massive infrastructure of bills. There's lots of negotiation going on.
Two bills. One is an infrastructure bill, and everybody's okay on that. But the progressives in the House, about 20 or 30 of them, have said to Nancy Pelosi, forget it. We're not going with you.
More than that, John.
It's
now up to 60. According to Camilla Jayapal, who is our own, you know, Seattle's own, she's the head of the Progressive Caucus. She's the one that got Nancy Pelosi to actually say, don't take a vote today because
we're not there for you.
I've got as many as 60. It's not people are not even in the Progressive Caucus.
We're
now saying, so anyway, go ahead.
So the point is that what they say is, we're not going to vote on the $1.5 trillion infrastructure, which is about $550 billion, if we don't get the $3.5
trillion.
We're going to link the two together, and we will knock that one down if you don't give us this one. So we're not going to spend $550 billion if you don't let us spend $3.6 trillion, which people have said it's actually close to $5 trillion. By the way, when they use the word trillion and five or 3.5, I have to understand that's over a 10-year period. These are all of these things through budget. It's not in one fell swoop. It's $3.5 trillion. We don't have that. But Joe is explaining that it's not going to – this is the new thing, and I've heard a couple of them say it over the weekend, that it's not going to cost anything.
It's all paid for. It's all paid for, but a lot of these are flat tax cuts that exist within my proposal. And they're being calculated as if the cost of the child care tax credit is a cost to the government. It's not. It's reducing taxes, not increasing taxes.
Well, not for everybody, because there's people who pay no taxes to get a break. But he's like, it doesn't cost anything. It's free. Well, that's like saying if you went to a store or went to out to dinner and you and I went to dinner and we spent like $500 on the meal. Well, it's not free. We paid for it. And what do we spent the $500 on the dinner as opposed to spending the $500 on something else. So if you pay for it, it doesn't mean it's free. It means you just paid for it. He says he's going to pay for it by taxing the rich because the rich don't pay their fair share.
Right.
And then Jayapal over the weekend or just a little while ago, she texted out, U.S. has nearly one-third of the world's billionaires. Meanwhile, our poverty rate is the fourth highest in the world. Tax the rich. What? We're the fourth highest poverty rate in the world?
I know. I'd like to see what those where she's basing that.
I mean, I think she get that one out. Right out of her congressional rear end, because there is no way we have the fourth highest poverty rate. We're not even close to that. If we were to take over the UK, let's get and make them the 51st state.
51th, I like that.
The 51st state. You know
let's
where they
coin
would
that.
They would be. I think they would be poorer than Alabama. They'd be the second poorest state in the United States next to Alabama if we took over the UK. If we took over Sweden and Germany and Denmark and we added all those to the United States as well, they would also be near the bottom as far as just overall income. They would be bottom third of U.S. So we generate 20% of the world's wealth. We have about 4 or 5% of the world's population, and we are by no means anywhere near the fourth when it comes to poverty. But that doesn't matter because is that a fact? Or should that be challenged? Should Twitter put a thing next to that and stop that? Because that's just misinformation, or are you allowed to just write whatever you want?
Jayapal is very sharp, so there's probably a footnote to whatever she's referring to. And you caught me flat-footed because I just saw it during the break.
Okay.
So we'll have to see what she's referring to because it's not the total. But let's get back to what's interesting. What Jayapal is doing. So right now we've heard a lot about Manchin and Sinema. Those are the two moderate Democrats that are not going along in the Senate. That are not going along with the other the majority of Democrats that want to get this $3.5 trillion. And they say, listen, you've got to meet us. You need our votes because without us, you don't have your 50 and you don't have your majority with Kamala breaking the tie. So there's been a lot of concentration on what they want. Well, now that the progressives in the House, led by Pramila Jayapal, you know, are saying, no, you've got to work with us. We are not going to go with it if you compromise with Manchin and Sinema, which means that both sides of the Democratic Party are willing to send Joe Biden's administration down in flames by not even agreeing with each other. So then the question is, are they really willing to do that? Is it kind of like a, you know, anyway, Jayapal, this is what I thought was interesting. This is the kind of negotiations going on. She says there are three ways. If people are objecting to the $3.5 trillion, that number, there are three ways to lower that bill's price tag, which is the way they figure they'll get it through. One is to reduce the number of
Here she is saying that.
Let's talk about what people want, and then let's come to the number from that. It's not just a random number. So if somebody wants less than $3.5 trillion, tell us what you want to cut. Do you want to cut the child care? Do you want to cut...
child care. So you want to cut child care? That's not fair to children, right?
Paid leave. What is it?
Yeah. Paid leave? That's not fair to moms and dads. So you don't cut that?
You want to cut. And then let's figure it out from there. But President Biden also said something very important the other day, which is this is a $0 bill because it's going to be completely paid for with taxes on the wealthiest and the largest. The joint
It's paid for. Do you believe by taking money from someone like a corporation, which a corporation, a bunch of people, and corporations just collect taxes and then pass it on. Do you really believe, but if you tax corporations more, that there's no cost to the U.S. economy, and then the government takes it and spends it?
What the argument there is that it doesn't add to the national debt.
Will it grow the economy?
Well, I mean, there are economists that argue that whether it'll, inhibit it or expand, it'll expand because of that. But the thing is, it's rhetorical language because when Trump basically, from the Democrats' point of view, the tax reform was a giveaway to the rich, the people that have the most money. Well, he didn't pitch it that way. He saw it as a way to start the economy. It's just it's the rhetorical spin on that. He didn't say, this is going to cost us $7 trillion more in debt. Apparently, Trump administration add $7 trillion to the national debt. he didn't pitch it that way because he's pitching it on what it's going to do for us.
Taxes
and so,
for the rich.
To say it
the,
doesn't cost us, it's not adding to the debt if you bring in the taxes on the richer.
Well, you have to just, it's, I mean, it's difference between supply side economics or Keynesian economics. Do you allow the economy to keep its money to invest, to grow with capital, to create more jobs, to create more wealth? Or do you take the money from the private sector, redirect it to the government so that the government then distributes to different, you know, special causes? Does that grow the economy or does that just grow the size of government?
So liberal economists say that what happened with the Trump tax cuts is that didn't they kept that money. They didn't pour it back into the economy. And that's why it didn't work.
Well,
again,
I mean, get into they actually bought back stocks and things like that. But but overall, the taxes on the rich went up slightly. The taxes on the middle class and the poor went down. But overall, do you want a bigger government? This is what it all gets down to. Do you want the government more involved? Do you want the government to pay for college? Do you want the government to pay for childcare? Do you want the government to hand out checks every single month, regardless of the choices that people are making in their life? And if that's what you want, if you want universal basic health care and universal basic everything. Do you want the doctors to pay for all of it? Do you want them to pay for it? You want to be like Switzerland and Denmark and these other countries that are 4 million, 5 million people. If you are, and if you live in one of those Scandinavian countries, then you're okay making $50,000 a year, and the government takes 60% of your income, plus the value-added tax, which is about 20%. So then you simply say, if you're living over there, I don't care that I don't get to keep 60% of the money I make because the government gives me this and this and this and this and this. I'm perfectly happy. I'm content. Do we in America, do we want to tax people that are making $50,000 a year at 60% so they can provide to you college and daycare, the same sort of great customer service that you get at the TSA line?
Okay. So yes and yes. According
you are.
To
you,
polls,
you would like that. You would like that. To see somebody.
I'm talking about the American public. They like the agenda of the Biden administration. That's why he got more votes than Donald Trump, and why the polls. And we both know the suspect aspect of polls. But they like this Build Back Better program that with the $1 trillion package. The trillions of dollars in a package. They like what those are for. And that's why I think Jayapal has an interesting tactic, which is, okay, but tell me where you don't want to spend the money. Because people go, well, no, I actually think that's great. Childcare, help pre-kindergarten. Let's, you know, get dental and hearing aid care for the elderly. That those are actually okay things. The question is, ultimately, is it going to be worthwhile? You know, is it going to be financially capable? And I think we're a long way from turning into Europe. Well, we are taking one more step that way, just like FDR took a step in that direction. But and people now
do we want to be like Europe? Do we want to have growth at 2% or 1%? And by the way, their population is only 5 million.
We're not Europe, though. What we're doing is we're moving in the direction. Do you want a stronger social safety net?
And let me say this. Hold on a second. I fell off the line. I fell off the line for 1 second. I want to adjust something that you said. The American people didn't vote for Joe Biden because of his plan. They voted for Joe Biden because he wasn't Donald Trump. He had no plan other than the fact I'm not Donald Trump. But secondly, Tom, do we want to be Europe? Because once you start in that, but once you start in that direction, it's very hard to stop. Because you just continue to grow the size of government, and then nobody wants to vote something out of their own pocket. The reason everybody wants to get this blast, they want to get this. But do they really? Because do they want to get? Do they want to get taxed at 50% of their income?
Not that heavily, no.
Oh, then how much?
Right now they don't. If right now, if the average were paying 14%, we could do 15%. If it provides for, you know, dental care and hearing aids for the elderly that are not covered by Medicare now, people go, that's worth it. So we don't have to, it's not like it's all or nothing. We can move in that direction, just like Social Security is. That's a version of socialism,
which is going broke.
Extreme version,
which is
I know,
broke.
But we can also, people like it, and if we can figure out a way to make it financially, soluble, then people do
taxes
like that.
Increase the taxes. But it gets into this, Tom. Do you want the government, with the great government service that it has, to choke out choices that are available in the price? Tom, let me ask you this.
Choke them out, John. It's not that extreme.
Tom,
that's the
difference. It is, because, Tom, here's the difference. Here's the difference. When you make something free, it becomes very, very expensive. College, for instance, community college, become
that's
very
not
expensive.
Free.
Healthcare is very, very inexpensive because it's free, because the only person that pays for it is every other taxpayer. If you're okay with the government getting larger and larger and larger and larger to provide all of these great
only
services that the
people.
Government yes. can service us with, okay. when there is no competition, there is no advancement. So you end up with government-run organizations. And if you think government-run organizations are good, even though there's no competition to make them better,
it's a combination of both, obviously.
Okay.
You don't want to squelch out. That's why I've always said, my ideal scenario, if we can't have a Plato's philosopher king, is a capitalist system with a socialist underpinning.
How big,
as the safety net. Well, that's the battle. If we pay 14% taxes, I think we could maybe do 15% and see if that's worth it, or 16% and see if that's worth it. That is the balance, and that's what we do all the time. And that's why we have Republicans who are more fiscally conservative and Democrats who are more liberal in their social safety net desires.
I wouldn't give the Republicans credit. I would not give the Republicans credit for being fiscally conservative.
Well, that is true.
Right. And if you find out that it's not 14, not 15, not 16, not 17, that you get up to 20, chalk it up to the American people being so naive to think that, we'll just tax the rich, we'll get the money from them, and then therefore we'll have all these services. Don't you think the rich guy will do everything he possibly can, or she will do everything they possibly can to avoid paying those taxes? Is it like the millionaire surtax in France when more than 57,000 millionaires moved out of France? Mm-hmm. They will leave. They will do something. They will not stand by and allow the government to rob them of their money. All right, here's Tracy Taylor with traffic. Here we go, Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Thank you, Laura Kiel, everybody there at Kiel Mortgage, for all the hard work you do. I had dinner with my friends, Larry, Dana, and
that's just
Myers
one.
As well.
Okay.
Yeah, Larry and Dana, and the Myers, Todd Myers, and his beautiful wife have moved to Cleellum, Tom. And,
no.
Todd
Myers has?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
And it's so funny. We're sitting having dinner, and I'm having dinner with Rye as well. We're there, and Larry goes, don't say anything about the Seahawks game. I've got it taped. I can't wait to watch it. And it's so weird when you know the person doesn't know what you know, and you know what they're in for, and you feel like so sorry for them, because you're like, I really want to be like, can I just put you out of your pain right now and just say, you know what? Just watch the first half.
Russell drops back in the shotgun. Two receivers near side. Tyler Lockett is the slot on the left.
There's your highlight right there.
Metcalf is wide to the right. Russell looks far side. Throws it out to Metcalf. He makes the catch. Does he get it? And he does. Touchdown, Seahawks. Just a quick out route to the right side. DK Metcalf, who then stretches that long 6'4" body toward the pylon. He gets the ball across, and it's a touchdown from 10 yards out. The Seahawks on top in their opening drive.
And that point, Larry could have turned the television off and would have walked away happy. Like, well, they are the Seahawks I know and love. And the Vikings seemed completely flat-footed. And then at that point, it was, what the hell? In the second half. And that's when I stopped watching. So I asked my son to call in. And all I've done is recorded him, Tom. So you can talk. And then occasionally Tom or I will jump in. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, so perfect. Just like the game before, we were ahead at halftime. 17. At one point, we were ahead 17-7 in the first half.
Yeah.
And when they crept back into the game, you know, I thought, oh, that's okay. I mean, I still felt confident the Seahawks were going to win. We're the better team. Even though we're on the road, I think we were favored. This is fine. That team hadn't won a game yet. And then as the third quarter ended and I realized that we weren't doing anything, Seattle, and Minnesota, we couldn't stop Minnesota, I realized, oh, no. Now I don't think we are going to win this game. And we ended up getting thumped. We got no points in the second half.
Yeah.
We had the ball like three times, I think, in the it's just like we couldn't do anything defensively to stop them. So it was absolutely disastrous. Now, here's what's happened. Here's my only justification for why we shouldn't
disastrous. Yes, go ahead, Tom.
Why we shouldn't necessarily jump ship yet.
Okay.
The last two teams that we played that we were beating handily at halftime, Tennessee and Minnesota, what they did say was what those teams had on their side was desperation. Tennessee, got thumped their first game, and they were behind at home.
Oh.
against Seattle. So they were desperate enough to win. Same thing, Minnesota was 0-2. They were desperate to win. I think finally Seattle's put itself in a position to being desperate enough that they have to win.
Maybe
we will.
Chip on the shoulder, right?
Dad, I can take this one. And Tom, I got to say, you're right as always. I think this is a team that is very shallow and has a lot of good, strong names. You look at Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, you know, even Carlos Dunlap. You can kind of get a sense, maybe an illusion, that this is a good football team. Sort of the same deal with the offense, but that's been the same thing for about the better part of a decade with, you know, Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. It's like, how is that not going to be a good offense, including Chris Carson? But then you look sort of below that, it's a team that doesn't really have any good role players. You know, the second level guys, the third level guys that come in there, so you're supposed to do their job. We don't really have that. A really bad secondary. I mean, Quandre Diggs, that's another name. He's a good player. Not exactly an elite coverage player, more of a sort of a bruising strong safety or a free safety, that is.
Wow, look at Ryan.
And certainly can't make up for the mistakes that Trey Flowers is going to make inevitably on the back end. Deep cover three that they keep trying to run.
Okay. Yeah, that's, way to go, how's Rye. That? You agree with Rye?
Yes.
18-year-old kid.
The weird thing about this is he's right. We have a lot of stars, not only on offense. I mean, more people know that because we like offense more. So, you know, Tyler Lockett and, you know, Chris Carson and DK and obviously Russell. But on the backside, we've got Carlos Dunlap and we've got Quandre Diggs is sort of like the Cam Chancellor. He's kind of like the missile, the hard hitting guy, along with Jamal Adams. I mean, we do have remnants of what could be if we had a few more players, another Legion of Boom. However, we don't have much of a team, and the team doesn't play well. It was amazing. Even, you know how you hear Wyman and Rabel broadcast the game. Well, they are pro Seahawks, obviously, and even they're kind of scratching their heads. And they're going, why are we playing so far off? Why are we like 6 yards deep? You know, why are these guys so wide open? I mean, they were just like, I just don't understand what the scheme is. They can't figure out if it was scheduled that way or not. That we, at this point, we have no identity as a team. But everyone's saying, what's our identity? Are we a passing team or a running team? And we have neither. And the problem is because we're not good at anything. Usually your identity is what you're best at.
Right.
Right now, we have one of the greatest quarterbacks of his generation, and we're getting zip out of him, you know, in the second half for two games in a row. I'm a little concerned. Here's why Seahawks fans are.
I'll ask you to speak to the next game coming up, and then Rye's going to channel me. So go ahead.
Okay, good.
So
San Francisco. Here's the problem with San Francisco. Okay. There are a big rival, right? They're really good. They did lose their running back. But here's the problem with San Francisco. They just lost a thriller last night to Green Bay. So they're coming off a loss. We're both coming off a loss. We both will be motivated. We both may feel a little desperate. And because it's a home game for San Francisco, they are going to feel like we need to win this one. And I'm a little concerned about us because we are already two games behind two other teams in the division. If we lose another one, we'll be two games behind San Francisco, and maybe three games behind L.A. We have to play San Francisco and L.A. back-to-back in our division. If we lose those two, and we'll be underdogs in both those games, if we lose both those two, we'll be 1-4, and there's no way if we're in that position.
If I were 18, this is what I would say.
There isn't a bad team in the NFC West. If there is, it's definitely us. possibly could be overreacting. You know, 1-2, you look at around the league, there are a lot of good teams that are 1-2. The Chiefs, for example. But, 49ers are a really sound team. They're back healthy this year, and I think it's going to be a similar story. You know, might be able to come out, post a couple of touchdowns or field goals, get some points on the board early. But Jimmy Garoppolo, who has struggled, I think even it won't be an issue. They've got a lot of talent. Of course, George Kittle and Debo Samuel. So I think we lose again. That's all I got.
Yeah. I know. We're going to be underdogs.
We're down three games.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, we'd be 1-3. We've
lost three
games. Have to play L.A. in the first four games.
Oh, my God. And
L.A.
is on fire.
The best. They destroyed Tampa Bay yesterday with Tom Brady. Yeah, things are – the great thing about football is just when you least expect it, there are upsets. And I think we could – I'm half predicting that we're going to upset San Francisco, not because we're a better team, but because we're the more desperate team.
So you, your whole premise of the motivation is humiliation, that you
exactly.
just play. So you go, you're just so desperate for a win, you're more desperate than the other team.
Yeah. You'll play
then how come
a little
the Cleveland Browns went like 0-18 so many games? Where was the desperation for a team?
Well,
like
the difference,
that?
John, is they didn't have any talent at the time, and they had lousy coaching. Okay. I believe in our talent. I believe in our coaching. We're going to win a few games. We may not All even right. we were supposed to be a Super Bowl contender. We might not even make the playoffs. This is concerning. It's all going to be changed come Sunday, though. We're going to win and set the world on fire.
All right. All we need is that guy to kick a 66-yard field goal.
Sure, I'll take it.
Anyway, everyone's going to text in right now. Tracy Taylor, take care of traffic for us. All right, I know. Tucker kicks it. Ravens, 66 yards, beats the Detroit Lions in the final seconds. Everybody's texting. Justin Tucker, Ravens, Lions, come on, guys. Sorry, we're so busy. Not watching the Seahawks game. All right. Dave Kroll from the Foo Fighters. This is a great story. But we get the whole setup on the story on this one, Chris? The entire thing?
Yeah, it's pretty much Dave in there.
Okay, it's all in there. So Dave Kroll. So the idea is that this is the idea of doing something nice for somebody, and then it comes back to you in the form of a chair. Here is King Five's... Is this Callie Green?
In a sold-out show, it's the first time Darren Wall's taken the stage since he was shot.
And it's only been about 3 weeks. So 3 weeks off and we're back into it.
He admits he's nervous and excited, still recovering after stopping a gunman at a venue in Idaho. That's when Darren was shot in the leg. We spoke to him just days after it happened.
And it's my belief that if he'd entered the bar, that he would have used that gun on a lot of people that night.
The gunman was arrested by Boise police, and Darren's band Greyhawk is ready to rock again.
It just feels like a celebration that we're still here, still alive.
A celebration that will go down in rock and roll history.
It's a wild Mad Max contraption.
Sitting on this stage is the throne, used by a few rock stars who've needed a little help.
Right, there's three people that have used this. It's Dave Grohl, Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses, and me.
Wow.
It belongs to Dave Grohl, who rocked out while sitting after breaking his leg during a tour in 2015.
Actually, it was Dave's leg was a right leg, so they had it customized for my left leg, too.
The power of social media brought the throne to Darren.
And it got into the Foo Fighters management, who asked me what was going on. I sent them your news story. They looked at that. They showed it to Dave Grohl. He called me from the MTV VMA Awards and basically said, I'll ship that throne up to you at my expense.
Darren says this is a symbol of the rock and roll community coming together.
Wow, can you imagine that? Yeah. Get a phone call, you look down. Hey, it's Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters. Like, what? That's good. I mean, the throne, Tom, when you hurt your knee, you had that big operation on your knee. Didn't we get you a throne? What did we get for you? I can't remember.
I wish. I think I put a rickety old wooden chair under my leg and called it good.
But we did auction off your leg brace at
That's
the auction
true.
To raise money for a local
cause.
Charity. So it did come around. And we reenacted you falling and breaking, messing up your leg. Remember that?
That's right, and I never got to see that because I was behind stage, so I was hoping somebody would take a picture of it or a video of it, like my brother or my wife or something, and I never did see that. But yeah, I loved it. You were impersonating me, and Rachel Bell was playing my mom.
Your mom,
and I missed
right,
it.
Right, right. I think Felix was in it, too. Yeah, we were at a graveyard, and we were visiting, I think, your father's grave or something.
Yes.
It was. Started to fall.
Yeah.
And as you were falling back, you then reached out to save your mom
because
you didn't want to knock her down. And then, I did the whole thing in slow motion. Of course, there's no video of it. All of the things we do live, no one ever bothers to record it or videotape it. It's like,
it was our third show, and they said, well, we never video. Well, we'll videotape. Don't you worry. Well, they did like the, 30 seconds of it or something.
Yeah.
And so I never did see it. If anybody was at the show and took a picture of it, I'd love to see it.
I mean, I think there's video of John Wilkes Booth at the Kennedy Theater, but anything or a Ford Theater, nothing of us. All right. Tracy Taylor looking at the traffic.